Coming up on a special edition of New York Now, the first television debate between New York 19 district candidates Antonio Delgado and John Faso. They'll answer our questions in studio and your questions at home. It's next right here on WMHT.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is a New York Now special edition. The 19th Congressional District Debate.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special edition of New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. Tonight's debate is brought to you by WMHT-TV and the Times Union. We want to welcome in our viewers in the greater Capital Region and Hudson Valley, as well as those of you tuning in on WSKG, our PBS affiliate in Binghamton, and those watching across the country on C-SPAN. Thanks for joining us. Without further ado, it's time now to welcome in our 19th district candidates. It's okay to applause. This is a one time. We have asked our audience members to refrain from clapping from now on so we can hear as much as possible from the candidates. I will be your moderator, and I'm joined tonight by three of the best journalists in the Capital Region, starting off from the Times Union, political reporter Dave Lombardo. Next to Dave is a familiar face to those New York Now viewers, Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. And finally, my co-host on New York Now, Casey Seiler, who is also the senior editor for news at the Times Union. He will be monitoring questions on social media. If you want to have a chance to have an active role in the debate, here's your chance. If you want to ask the candidates something, you can do so by logging onto our Facebook account. Just like us and ask away. Or on Twitter, our handle is at NYNow_PBS. Just use the hashtag NewYork19. We'll have those reminders up on screen during the program. All right, let's go over the rules. Each candidate will be given 1 minute for their opening statement. After that, we will begin the formal questioning. Each candidate will have 90 seconds to answer, while the other can offer up to a 45-second rebuttal. If a panelist believes an answer needs clarification from one of the candidates, they can then ask a follow-up question. That person will have up to 30 seconds to clarify their answer. Before the debate, we flipped a coin to determine the order for our opening and closing statements. And up first is Mr. John Faso.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you to all of you watching this program, and thank you for those in the studio audience, and thank you to my opponent, Antonio Delgado, for joining us here today as well. I'm running on my record in this very polarized time in our country is I rank 18th out of 435 members of Congress for being most bipartisan. I've worked hard over the last 22 months that I've served in Congress for veterans, for seniors, for our agriculture industry throughout the 19th district, and also dealing with the opioid crisis. I'm pleased that a major piece of legislation that I sponsored with 275 co-sponsors, Democrats and Republicans in the House, was adopted by the House and Senate in a major piece of opioid legislation dealing with treatment, enforcement, and education. That legislation will be signed next week by the President, and I'm pleased as a freshman member of Congress, I was able to get that done to stop the flow of illegal fentanyl into the United States from places like China through the U.S. mail. So I look forward to this opportunity to discuss the issues and look forward to the next 3 weeks of this campaign.
All right, thank you. Opening statement number two to Mr. Delgado.
Thank you, Matt. Congressman, good to see you. It is a pleasure to be here to discuss the issues. I'm running because growing up here in upstate New York, born and raised in Schenectady, I remember what it was like for my parents to have good jobs at GE that allowed us to work our way up. And I remember how they focused on my education. And with that focus, allowed myself and my brother to advance and achieve good things. But for too long, our political leaders, particularly those who've been there as career politicians, have failed to recall or remember what it means to be a working family and to advocate for everyday Americans. For too long, the individuals we put in Congress have been backed by outside interests and corporate PAC money and have used the language of divisiveness and partisanship to keep us from dealing with real issues like the health care crisis, like the climate change crisis, like wage stagnation and income inequality. What we need are fresh faces, fresh voices with diverse backgrounds who understand the value of opportunity, understand the value of a public school education. than I do.
All right, before we went on air, we flipped a coin to see who would get the first question, and it goes to Mr. Delgado. Anyone who has watched television over the past couple months here in the district has been inundated with ads from both sides, some directly from the campaigns, others from outside groups. The ones that have drawn the most attention, even national attention, are the ones highlighting Mr. Delgado's rap album released in 2007. Some of the ads highlight lyrics in the songs that touch on social issues, including the use of the N-word. Mr. Delgado, the question to you is, do you agree with some, as the New York Times has said in an editorial, that these ads are race baiting?
I think the ads are deeply unfortunate, and they speak to a climate right now that is divisive and ugly, and we can do better. I think what we've seen as far as the trends are going in this country is away from cooperation and communicating with each other with decency and respect. I'm happy to note that not only the New York Times, but local publications, Woodstock Radio pulled the ads. 18 clergy members came out and denounced the ads. Dr. Benjamin, a doctor from SUNY New Paltz, a good friend of the congressman, publicly apologized for his involvement and privately called me as well. And the former congressman, Chris Gibson, notes the regrettable tone of the ads. We have to get beyond this if we really want to solve complicated problems. If you really want to deal with the issues that I just talked about in terms of healthcare and in terms of access to capital and income inequality, we've got to get to a point where we're no longer at each other's throats just spewing misleading facts, but actually get to the substance of what's really going wrong with our country right now. And that is the system of government right now that is not responding to the needs of working people. When you have 80% of folks in this country sharing just 10% of the wealth, that is a problem. When you have two-thirds of folks living paycheck to paycheck, that is a problem. And the answer is not to break the backs of working middle-class folks who with a train and a half-dollar tax break that adds to our deficit and bankrupts our ability to invest in our future and bankrupts our ability to protect those programs that so many folks in this country need, like Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security, income security programs. We are slashing programs and leaving folks behind.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Faso, you have 45 seconds.
Well, I would just simply point out that those are not my ads. Those ads are provocative, no doubt. Those ads, however, are provocative, and Mr. Delgado's words are provocative in terms of what he said about women, about law enforcement, about our founding fathers. But the fact of the matter is, I have to tell you, I do regret the notion that somehow these ads were mine, because they're not. And I'll tell you this. I reject the support of anyone who would vote for me because of Mr. Delgado's race. I reject racism in all its forms. And the fact of the matter is, I think we can do better in our country. And that's why I have set a tone for bipartisanship in my tenure in Congress. You don't rank 18th out of 435 working with the other side without being bipartisan. And that's my record.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Lombardo, you have the first question, and it goes to Mr. Faso.
President Bill Clinton was successfully impeached 20 years ago on perjury and obstruction charges. Nearly five dozen Democratic members of the House this summer backed an impeachment against President Donald Trump, citing his ideology. What do you believe should be the threshold for impeaching the president, and has Donald Trump reached that point?
No, I don't believe impeachment is warranted. I do think that there's no doubt that the president is a polarizing figure. And what I've tried to do during my tenure in office is to work with the other side. I'm the lead sponsor of legislation, for instance, that says we should reauthorize the school-based health clinics. I have Democrats and Republicans on that bill. We have the largest network of rural school-based health clinics in the nation here in the 19th District, run by the Bassett Health Center. The fact of the matter is that on issues like opioids, on mental health, I've worked across party lines. I do think there's an incredible division in the country. There's no doubt. And I have attempted during my tenure, by the way I've comported myself and by my own actions and in the legislation that I've sponsored, to tone down that volume. And I do think that it's regrettable when I see the attacks, for instance, on Judge Kavanaugh. Just a few weeks ago, we saw the Democrats in an absolute reprehensible fashion attack the character and really try to assassinate this individual politically because they didn't want him on the court. Well, this was a liberal version of McCarthyism, in my view. And so this venom tends to run on both sides. And I don't think anyone can ignore that. But also, let's face the fact, if I should be judged by my actions and what I've done as a member of Congress and in my public life, and I think that is consistent with where people want me to act.
All right, Mr. Delgado, 45 seconds for you.
Yes, I think it's important to note that we do have an ongoing investigation headed up by Republican Special Prosecutor Bob Mueller. And that investigation is resulting in a lot of information, a number of convictions, a number of sentences, plea bargains, and it's been very fruitful in a meaningful way. The congressman said that he understands the impatience people have with the investigation. We disagree. I think it's important that we conclude the investigation, make sure that we make any appropriate judgment based on those findings. That would be responsible at that point. I am not for doing anything prior to that fact. It is imperative that we go through the process and understand what, in fact, has happened and to what extent. The fact that the congressman talks about a political witch hunt is, to me, exactly what he's noting is inconsistent with the very concept of being partisan or not bipartisan in the first place.
Okay, thank you very much. Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio has the next question, and it goes to Mr. Delgado.
Mr. Delgado, your opponent says you want the government to take over health care in a single-payer style program. Is that your proposal, and would you work to reinstate or strengthen some of the provisions of the ACA?
Yes, my proposal has been consistently to institute a public option. We're the only developed country in the world without some form of universal health care. And I prefer the form of a public option. And what do I mean by that? I mean opening up Medicare to make sure that folks have a choice to opt in to the system. Right now, if you do not qualify for Medicaid or for Medicare, you are completely beholden to the profit motive that operates within our private insurance employer-based market system. By introducing a public component, that'll drive down the premiums and the deductibles, because now the public component increases the competition. Secondly, it actually creates some freedom and flexibility for our small business owners who are struggling to figure out how to cover the costs of employer-based insurance. It also frees up employees who sometimes feel trapped at their employment because they're not sure if they can find the same level of care elsewhere. We do this, we bring down premiums and deductibles. I also think we need to make sure that Medicare has negotiating power with Big Pharma. The biggest driver of our health care costs are prescription drugs. I have not heard the congressman say that he believes that Medicare should have negotiating power with Big Pharma, and I suspect it's because he takes a lot of corporate PAC money from the pharmaceutical and insurance industries.
All right, 45 seconds for Mr. Faso.
Well, the fact is that Mr. Delgado, during his primary, said that he favored the path to single payer. And he said a lot of things. Now he just wants to say he's for a limited public option. The fact of the matter is the National Democratic Party is pushing towards a single payer system. And that's inevitably what he would support were he elected in Congress. And the fact is a single payer system would destroy Medicare as we know it. It would mean it would make illegal employer-provided or union-provided health care, and it would raise the spending by $32 trillion over a 10-year period, and it would double everyone's income taxes. That is not an approach, and I can tell you, if you have Mr. Delgado's approach, if you think health care is expensive now, wait till it's free.
May I clarify?
No, we don't have that chance right now. Oh, Casey, okay. We have to go to social media questions. What's out there?
Our first social media question, and I do encourage people to please send me more, comes from Rana Roy, who notes that within the Republican Party, the concept of climate change and its causes have come in for skepticism and even outright hostility within the Republican Party. That is implicit in her question, I think. She says, asks Congressman Faso, if reelected, what will you do to change the policy position of your party and address the looming crisis of climate change?
Well, I believe that climate change is contributed to by man. I think that man's efforts and man's activities contribute to climate change. And I have, as a member of the bipartisan climate change caucus in the House, it's a bipartisan group where the only way you can join is if you bring someone from the other side. I have worked assiduously on this issue, trying to find common sense solutions, especially ones that use technology to help us get ourselves out of the increasing climate temperature that we're facing over the next few decades. Now, the fact is, here in the Capital Region, we have a great company called Plug Power, which is using advanced fuel cell technology and battery storage. And this is the kind of thing that will use technology to help us surmount this issue. Technological improvement is the best thing we can do, not mandated by government, but using the market forces of the private sector to create, with profit motives and private sector incentives, to create the clean technologies of the future that we can use to deal with this. I've sponsored legislation on this, and when my own party in the Congress tried to have legislation that would thwart the Department of Defense from considering the impact of climate change on our own military defense, I and 45 other Republicans voted against that. We defeated that amendment. So I've been willing to stand up to the majority of my party when I think they're wrong.
All right, 45-second rebuttal for Mr. Delgado.
Yes, the League of Conservation Voters ranks Congressman Fazio at 34% in terms of his environmental record, and rightfully so. He's voted to repeal the Clean Stream Protection Rule. Did not say anything about the constant assault on the EPA from both Pruitt and now Wheeler. He's somebody who has stated numerously that he thinks the way forward is natural gas, not clean energy. He's not talked at all about moving from subsidies and tax credits from the fossil fuel industry, which we spend about $4 to $5, if not more, $1 billion a year, rather than shifting those over to renewable energy, where you have wind, solar, and have real clean energy. He's not doing that because he's lobbied for oil pipelines for a good portion of his career, and it's important to make sure we get folks in Congress who are going to fight for real transition to renewable energy.
All right, moving on to Dave Lombardo now of the Times Union.
This question's for Mr. Delgado. What should happen to foreign-born adults who have chosen to live, work, and raise a family in this country illegally but have committed no other crimes? Should the federal government actively pursue their deportation?
No, what the federal government ought to be doing is making sure that we fix our broken immigration system, where you have millions of undocumented immigrants in this country who are afraid to come out of the shadows, in unfortunate part because we have leaders in this country who are flaming fanning the flames, of xenophobia, talking about building walls and talking about rapists and criminals. This is not a productive conversation. We need to be getting back to a point where we can bring folks out of the shadows in a humane and compassionate way. Listen, if you've broken the law, we are a nation of laws. And if you've done so violently, yes, you shouldn't be here. But the vast majority of folks who are working here are upstanding individuals who are contributing to our community day in and day out. And it's important that we allow them a real clear path, first to legal residency and then ultimately to citizenship. We are a nation of immigrants, and it is a moral imperative that we get back to the business of being who we truly are. Not only is this a moral imperative, it's an economic one. As I've traveled across this district and focused on met with a number of farmers, particularly dairy farmers who are relying on this labor force, they are desperate to figure out how we can come to terms with this reality so that they have a reliable, secure force to do their business with. And right now they don't have that because of all the hysteria and the uncompromising, indecent conversation around this issue. We have got to get to bipartisan support and get to a place where we can all agree that this is a better way to move forward on this issue.
Mr. Fazio, you have 45 seconds.
Well, we are a nation of immigrants, but we're also a nation of laws. And it's important that we secure our border, but also reform our immigration system. And I am actually, Antonio may know this, maybe he doesn't, I'm actually a co-sponsor of major legislation that would fix the agricultural immigration system. And I've also been a sponsor of legislation and voted for legislation in the House, which unfortunately failed because every Democrat voted against it because they want the issue of immigration. They don't really want to solve the immigration. And I'm hopeful after the election we can get to it. But I am strongly in favor of enforcing existing laws. I'm against sanctuary cities, which my opponent supports. But I do think we have to find a way to fix the broken system. And that's exactly what I've done in Congress.
All right, Mr. Fazio gets the next question, and it comes from Karen DeWitt.
That's right. Congressman Fazio, do you think the U.S. should take steps to punish or sanction Saudi Arabia after the apparent murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi? And how much weight would you put on the ongoing investigation right now by Saudi Arabia?
This was simply all the facts that we know so far, and we don't know all the facts. But what appears to be the truth is that this man, who was a Saudi exile working as a journalist in the United States, that he was murdered by security forces of Saudi Arabia in Turkey. I don't think you can come to any other conclusion than that. The question is, what should the United States do at this stage? I think we have to pursue a very strong message to the Saudis diplomatically And I think you saw yesterday Secretary Mnuchin announce that he was not going to participate in an international financial conference in Saudi Arabia, obviously because of the concern that the U.S. government has. I don't think there's any going to be any difference among Democrats and Republicans on this issue. We have to be cognizant of the critical role that Saudi Arabia has in that region. But at the same time, we have to speak very plainly to them that what has apparently happened is completely unacceptable, and that there should be sanctions that would especially sanction those who would be connected to the regime in Saudi Arabia. And we should also be very clear that business as usual cannot continue unless there's some good explanation for what happened. Right now, I don't see it.
Mr. Delgado, you have 45 seconds.
Yes, I agree. We need to seriously reassess our relationship with Saudi Arabia. And it's not just about what just happened. It goes back to 9/11. It goes back to what they're doing in the Yemen engagement and the civil war there. And I think, unfortunately, we've put ourselves in a position, it seems at this point, to value making a deal or value financial gain at the expense of our potential moral value. So it's important that we rally around that now and collectively stand up and say we will not tolerate this behavior. It's also important that we continue to protect our press and speak highly of our press so that we set the right example for the world at large on how to treat press when they speak and maybe do so with a dissenting tone. We are a democracy, and it's important to protect a free speech and free press.
All right, thank you very much. We go to Casey Seiler next.
Our next social media question comes from Juan in Valencia, whose son was born prematurely, and the family faced high medical equipment costs before the Affordable Care Act went into effect. He writes, "I'm afraid that repealing the ACA, as Republicans, many Republicans still hope to do, would allow insurance companies or would give them free rein to set maximum payout for medical supplies. This would affect many seniors and sick children in our district that depend on medical supplies, leaving huge out-of-pocket expenses even with insurance. What are you going to do to make sure insurance companies pay for medical equipment costs if the ACA is repealed?"
This goes to Mr. Delgado.
Yeah, I'm going to fight to make sure they don't repeal the ACA. That's imperative. And it's not just that reality that will happen. The fact of the matter is the Republicans want to literally gut a lot of the ACA, including guaranteed protections for pre-existing conditions, including implementing an age tax on seniors, including defunding Planned Parenthood. All of these things the congressman voted for after promising his constituents that he would not do so. And I want to be clear, because there's been a back and forth about this discussion about pre-existing conditions. The fact is this: if you voted for the American Health Care Act, which is what the congressman did, you voted to gut guaranteed protections for pre-existing conditions. That is because in that act, any state could seek a waiver against the ban that prohibits private insurance companies from increasing their costs for those with pre-existing conditions. So yes, we're lucky in New York that that might not happen. But as far as I'm concerned, if you are sitting in a federal seat, your job is to look after all Americans. And so that bill that the congressman voted for literally would have rolled back guaranteed protections for a lot of Americans in our country. In the same vein, the age tax, which raised it from 3-to-1 to 5-to-1. Again, New York, we're lucky. We have community pricing. Other states don't have that. Interestingly enough, the congressman voted against that community pricing back in 1992. So he has consistently voted against the interests of seniors on this issue as well. So we need folks who are going to fight to expand health care coverage and not take it away from people. And right now we have a congressman who's made the exact wrong call on this issue time and time again.
Mr. Faso.
Well, I support protections for everyone with a pre-existing condition. The only pre-existing condition I hear from Mr. Delgado is his failure to consistently, accurately reflect my position on this issue. That's his pre-existing condition. He consistently distorts it, and that's what independent media have said about this. There is no such thing as an age tax. He knows that. His campaign even admitted they were wrong about it. The fact is, the protections for pre-existing conditions and the assurance for people like Juan in Valencia, who asked about payments for durable medical equipment and other supplies, those are readily available today, and they would continue to be under any insurance system that I would support.
All right, next question goes to Mr. Faso and will be asked by Dave Lombardo.
Since the launch of the Me Too movement, Congress has done little to address the systemic problems that enable workplace harassment, while individual states have taken the lead. What should be done on the federal level, and what should we do as a society to curb sexual misconduct?
It's a very good question. The fact is that in the congressional sphere where this has gotten attention, we have insisted, and now it's the policy, that there are no hidden settlements for members of Congress who might have been subject to these accusations and then paid penalties because of it. That was happening under Democrats and Republicans previously. It no longer is happening. On a national level, I think it's important for companies and governments to make sure that rules protecting people from sexual harassment in the workplace are enforced and that they are vigorously looked at. I think, you know, you come back to what's common sense in this regard. And I always go back to what my mother said to me when I was growing up, especially when I was a teenager and a young man going to college. She said, young man, you make sure that you don't do anything that you wouldn't want me to find out about. And I think if people would just consider also, we need these legal protections, but use common sense in these interactions that you have with people in the workplace and in a social setting. That's something that I think is often ignored. And I think the mom's axiom and adage and admonition to me is one that I think everyone should follow.
Mr. Delgado.
Yes, I'm not exactly sure what the congressman means by common sense. What I think is all too common is a culture of gender inequity, where women are being paid 80 cents on the dollar, where our young girls right now are walking around on college campuses being told that they have to have a higher evidentiary burden in order to prove that they've been sexually harassed. And we are living in a time where the reproductive rights of women are consistently under assault. These are all the systemic realities that women are facing day in and day out. And until we put people in the Congress who understand that and will fight and make sure that we have true gender equity, we will certainly not be in the place we ought to be. And you can best believe that's the work that I want to do.
Mr. Delgado gets the next question from Karen DeWitt.
That's right. President Trump, since taking office, has engaged in several trade disputes with Mexico, Canada, China. He's even threatened a trade war against the European Union. Do we need to be adversarial with other countries on trade in order to get what we need, or should we be cooperative?
We should be cooperative. You know, I understand why the president thought, in light of China, for example's decision to dump steel or currency manipulate or steal our IP. Yes, we need to react to that and do so appropriately. But the manner in which you do that has implications. It can destabilize the marketplace, undermine the very objectives that we're trying to achieve. And I think we've seen how that reckless sort of behavior or approach can lead to some disastrous results. We had to, you know, have a rescue package for our farmers because of the approach he's taken. At the same time, you know, we did renegotiate NAFTA. And again, while I do not appreciate the approach the president took, I can give him credit because at the end of the day, our dairy farmers actually have more access now to the Canadian market. And so what's illuminating about that is that for too long, both Democrats and Republicans have not really been drilling down on these unfair trade deals. But at the same time, it's important that if we're going to engage in this conversation, we bring our allies to bear and we unite the world around us, particularly when it pertains to China. We have a lot of influence, and we can do this diplomatically using the world at large and international bodies to have a genuine conversation about how to deal with these things without alienating our allies or harming the very folks we're trying to help right here at home.
Mr. Faso, 45 seconds for you.
I've spoken to many small manufacturers in our district, whether they're in Kingston or Springfield Center or in Oneonta, concerned about the steel and aluminum tariffs. And I think there's no doubt the administration has really played hardball with some of our allies on this. And he is unconventional. There's no doubt. Donald Trump is an unconventional president. But I think when he said to the European Union, finally, you should pay up on your commitment to NATO. 2% of your GDP should go and pay for our common defense. And frankly, what the president did with Class 7 milk and the unfair and discriminatory tariffs that the Canadians had put against our dairy farmers is a tremendous win. And what's really astonishing is Antonio finally acknowledged that Trump did something right.
All right, our next question goes to Mr. Faso and will be asked by Casey Seiler.
Speaker Paul Ryan, who was just in the area supporting your reelection effort, will be departing at the end of the year. Democrats on the campaign trail have been confronted with the question of whether they'll support Nancy Pelosi once again as their leader. But who do you plan to support as the next leader of the House Republican Conference?
Kevin McCarthy from California. And
I think it's very clear that there's a real choice in this election. It's a choice between two candidates, one who believes in the role of government and would expand the role of government, versus a candidate who trusts the private sector, our free enterprise system, and recognizes there's a role for government, but not an overwhelming, dominating role. Dodd-Frank is a perfect example. The Democrats enacted Dodd-Frank because of the financial crisis in 2007 and 8. Many of those reforms were useful, particularly as they applied to larger institutions. But the fact is, they crushed the small and medium-sized financial institutions that the Main Street economy in this district relies upon. 75% of the jobs in our district come from small business. Where does small business get their capital? It comes from local banks, credit unions, community institutions. Mr. Delgado, he opposed our reform to Dodd-Frank. He stood with Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi on the regulations that crushed community banks and stopped them from lending. I had one community banker who said to me that he had to hire two new people to do compliance, and they prepared reports to the federal government that no one reads. That's the kind of overregulation that stifled our economy. We now have 4% growth, and we have to keep it going. Nancy Pelosi and Mr. Delgado will crush it.
45 seconds for Mr. Delgado.
Yeah, I'm looking for Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters. I don't see them on this stage.
They're funding you.
I did see, however, the leader of your party, your boss, come and sit down right next to you to give you a nice pat on the back for your deciding vote to rip healthcare away from millions of folks across this country. And I did hear him say to you the reporter, Benita, when asked, why would you come all this way? Why would you come and sit down next to the congressman? What is it about him that makes you feel so good to be here? His response wasn't he works for the people. His response wasn't he's bipartisan or he's cooperative. His response was, and I quote, he makes our majority work. That says a lot.
All right. Dave Lombardo has the next question, and it goes to Mr. Delgado.
Oh, I just want to follow up on what Casey just asked there, too. So, Mr. Delgado, who do you support for Speaker in 2019?
Very important question. I've not pledged my support to anybody and don't intend to until I'm in office.
Okay. And I'll come back to you with another one.
Do I get a follow-up on that?
Sure. Let's give him 20 seconds, same amount.
Well, that's just laughable. We know that Nancy Pelosi has already laid out her agenda. If they win control, she will be the Speaker of the House again. And her agenda is higher taxes, confiscatory regulations that crush the upstate economy. And that's why we should elect me instead of Mr. Delgado.
All right, Dave, okay. Nice bonus question there. Thanks. Now for your other one.
Scored one there. The 2019 federal deficit is projected to approach $1 trillion, and the national debt is now more than $21 trillion, despite a strong economy currently. Does the country have to cut spending or raise taxes to achieve a balanced budget?
No, what the country has to do is do away with that tax bill that added $1.5 trillion to our deficit on the backs of working and middle-class folks. That's what it has to do. $1.5 trillion. You know, since the congressman has been in office, the deficit has ballooned 32% in just a year, the last 11 months, from $600 to almost $900 billion. What happened to fiscal responsibility and conservatism? It has gone by the wayside. You know, the congressman spoke about the bank bill and how they want to roll back or allow community banks to have more access. It's the same thing every time. You want to give hardworking folks a little bit of money in their pockets. We'll take all of that. But why does it always come with strings attached? And what are those strings? The strings are massive giveaways to big corporations and a wealthy few. In essence, the individuals that continue to back Congressman Faso, they're constantly giving it away. $1.5 trillion for what purpose? Oh, it's going to trickle down? It never does. The opportunities don't trickle down. The wages remain stagnant. There is no growth on the ground. There's growth at the top, but not at the ground. And what happens is we can't invest in our future. We can't invest in infrastructure. We can't invest in renewable energy. We can't invest in our schools. And we cannot protect those programs that we know so many folks need. And we already hear the drumbeat. $1.5 trillion cut on Medicaid. $500 billion, you voted for this, to cut Medicare and turn it into a voucher program. Over $200 billion in educational programs. They are gnawing at the bone. And for what? Greed.
45 seconds, Mr. Faso.
Well, the fact of the matter is we have over 4% economic growth. That's the best way to reduce deficits and get our spending under control, which is to grow the economy. The prior administration, they were telling us 1 to 1.5% economic growth was the new normal. We now have more job openings in America than we have unemployed people. We have the lowest rate of unemployment among Black and Hispanic individuals in our country ever. We have more growth in the Main Street economy. I have a plan to cut property taxes, which Mr. Delgado was against, by removing the Medicaid mandate on the local homeowners and local small businesses. He's against it. It's probably because he just moved here from New Jersey and doesn't understand the burden of property taxes on New York homeowners.
All right, Karen,
I'm against it. Can I?
10 seconds real quick.
I'm against it because it's a ridiculous way to justify rolling back Medicaid expansion, leaving millions of folks without pre-existing conditions and levying an age tax. That's your justification for it.
$220 million of property tax reduction just in our district under my proposal, an average of $350 to $550 per homeowner in our district. That's not peanuts, and that's not ridiculous, Antonio.
And you're going to do that by literally throwing people off of health care.
All right, let's go to our next question. Karen DeWitt.
And by the way, I don't hold
it
against you from being from Long Island. I'm from upstate New York.
John Faso, we have to cut you off there.
Sorry.
John Faso gets the next question.
Well, you may have more of a chance because my question is also tax-related. It's to Congressman Faso. Congress approved President Trump's tax overhaul plan that no longer allows the deduction of more than $10,000 in state and local taxes from federal tax returns. Mm-hmm. We know that you were one of the few Republicans who voted against it, saying it would hurt a relatively high tax state like New York. Should that provision be repealed? And how would you work to make that happen?
Well, that is the only reason I voted against that tax bill, because I felt that the limitation of the state and local tax deduction was unfair to homeowners and to business taxpayers in this state. The fact is our property taxes are too high. Our spending is too high in New York. But I felt that it was unfair to New Yorkers living in a high tax state, who were basically the collateral damage if they're paying more than $10,000 in state and local taxes. Now, to be fair on this, the deduction, the standard deduction for individuals was doubled. So a family will have a standard deduction of $24,000. Most people in our district are getting a $1,500. Average families are getting $1,500 tax cut. And I heard Mr. Delgado say he wants to roll it back, repeal the tax cut. And he raises this issue about corporations. Apple is bringing home $240 or $238 billion they had stashed abroad they wouldn't bring home because our prior corporate tax policy subjected them to double taxation. That was crazy. And, you know, I know the gentleman grew up in Schenectady, but he spent his entire adult life out of the district. The next time he votes for Congress will be the very first time he's ever voted for Congress in this district. And, you know, it's true. I did grow up on Long Island. My mother insisted that I be with her down there. I wanted to be born upstate, but she insisted I be on Long Island with her. So that's really the end of the story in that regard.
Okay, Mr. Delgado.
So the cap, you said the only reason you have an issue with the tax bill is the cap. In fact, the cap is exactly what was used to pay for everything wrong with the bill. And it's interesting because you voted no originally because of the cap, when your party gave you a pass. But then when the party needed you to advance the bill to reconciliation with the Senate, despite the fact that both the Senate version and the House version had the cap, which you just said is the only thing that you had a problem with, you voted yes to advance it. Why'd you advance the bill after you just acknowledged it was the real problem was the salt cap? Nothing changed. And then the House rules, if the Senate version and the House version have the same issue, you can't negotiate it. So why would you vote yes to advance a bill that has a salt cap in it?
All right. Our next question goes to Casey Seiler, and this one's for Antonio Delgado.
Congressman Faso spoke earlier about his work to stem the flow of fentanyl into the country. What else does Congress need to do to address the opioid crisis that is devastating the 19th District, the state, and indeed the nation? And specifically, should pharmaceutical companies be held more directly responsible for the damage done?
Absolutely, they should be. You know, I've traveled all across this district, all 11 counties, done town halls. And one of the things that has become very heartbreaking is when a mother, and it's happened too many times now, has come up to me with tears in her eyes and said, I lost a son. It's a heartbreaking encounter, and it puts a lot of things in perspective. And while I appreciate the Congressman's efforts with the STOP Act, I think we can do a lot more. particularly when it comes to decriminalizing the behavior and really funding drug treatment centers and making sure that we give young people who are struggling with addiction a chance to actually have real opportunity and a chance to recover. Chief Volkman in Chatham has a program that I think we can model out. He opened up his law enforcement space in his office and said, his precinct, and said, you know, we welcome folks who are struggling with substance abuse. We'll get you to the resources that you need, whether it's in the mental health facilities or whether it's drug treatment centers. But this is an important piece. You know, you won't hear Congressman Fazio say we must hold those pharmaceutical companies accountable because he takes money from those pharmaceutical companies. You will hear John Fazio say let's roll back Medicaid expansion, and yet Medicaid funding is exactly what's needed to fund drug treatment centers. So you can't say on the one hand you're for decriminalizing the behavior, but then on the other hand take money away from the very resources that we would need to decriminalize the behavior in the first place.
Mr. Fazio.
It's utter nonsense. I mean, we have expanded funding for opioid treatment and prevention and education and enforcement. I was the lead sponsor of a bill that's going to stem the flow of illegal substances like fentanyl coming in through the U.S. Postal Service into this country. And the fact of the matter is, when you strip away the rhetoric on this issue, my experience, there's not a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans on this issue in Washington. We overwhelmingly pass legislation to deal with this. We're making sure that treatment and education and enforcement are adequately funded. And undoubtedly, there's more we can do. And sure, hold pharmaceutical companies accountable legally if they are shown to have violated the law. Absolutely do that.
All right. Our next question goes to Dave Lombardo of the Times Union and is for Mr. Fazio.
New York is likely to consider the legalization of recreational marijuana next year, following in the footsteps of other states. How should the federal government respond to states who have decided to legalize the use of recreational marijuana?
Well, I do not support, certainly at this time, I would like to see the situation and the experience of the states that have legalized this. Let's see what effects that it has over the next 5-10 years on public safety, on drug addiction, on academic scores among young people. Let's see what the effect is before we rush headlong into this. At the same time, the federal government has had policies which have been discriminatory against financial institutions and the businesses that are engaged in legal activities within those states. In other words, the company that's engaged in a legal marijuana business is oftentimes precluded from doing banking because of federal requirements. And I do think that that's unfortunate and unfair to those banks and those companies in those states. So I do think federal rules that would preclude a company in a legal business in a state from engaging in banking transactions, that should be changed. But in terms of expanding it in New York State, I think we have enough trouble right now in dealing with the impact. We were just talking about opioid addiction. Enough trouble right now in dealing with this before we should rush headlong into legalizing recreational marijuana.
Mr. Delgado.
Yeah, I do believe that we should be focusing on legalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes and ultimately for adult use if properly regulated. And at the very least, having talked with a number of veterans here across this district, we should be funding. And I believe there's a House bill working its way through the House right now. And I'm curious to get your point of view on
this.
I'm
for it.
Good. Where we would actually put money into research that will allow our veterans have research to figure out whether or not marijuana could help with PTSD. Yep. And we should do that. And I would certainly want to expedite that process for our veterans.
All right. Next question goes to Mr. Delgado and is from Karen DeWitts.
It's on gun control. What steps should Congress take to limit or ban assault weapons, require better background checks, or ban bump stocks?
Yeah, we got to do something. You know, I've always made it clear to folks as I travel across this district, as your congressman, it's my obligation to defend your rights, to protect your rights. The Second Amendment is a right, and I intend to protect it. But like any other right, it has its limits. The First Amendment, you can't yell fire in a movie theater. You can't incite violence. And in the case of a Second Amendment right, you can't own a fully automatic weapon. We have got to a place now in our society where there's a real gun epidemic.
You got 7-8 kids dying a day from gun violence. You have 17 to 18 being hospitalized teenagers. Women, 5 times more likely to die in a domestic violence dispute when a gun is involved. We have mass shootings in schools. We have it in concert halls. We have it in too many places, and it's happening at a clip that is just not tolerable, so much so that our young people are walking out saying we need answers. And what's amazing to me is there's so much consensus on a host of issues. 90% of folks, including 73% of NRA members, want universal background checks. 97% of this country wanted to ban the bump stock after Vegas, safe storage laws. Even the majority of folks want assault weapons bans, but we can't get a consensus on anything. And the reason is because of the gun manufacturing lobby that pours millions and millions of dollars into the NRA to engage in a misinformation campaign. We solve this problem by electing individuals who do not take money from the NRA. It's that simple. And the congressman has taken thousands of dollars from the NRA.
45 seconds for you, Mr. Faso.
Well, I support the administration's approach. A regulation is about to be implemented to ban bump stocks, which were used in the Las Vegas shootings. We've closed the loophole that the Department of Defense did not properly inform the background check system on a dishonorably discharged veteran who was discharged because of domestic violence, who committed then a church shooting in Texas, killing over 20 people. So there are restrictions that should be properly enforced. We are now enforcing the law against people that lie on background check applications. That wasn't done in the prior administration. But I support the Second Amendment. Mr. Delgado was clear he does not. We have thousands of law-abiding sportsmen and women in this state and across this country that obey the law. New laws are not going to thwart or stop crime.
All right, we have time for at least one more question, and we go to Casey Seiler for the next one. This is for John Faso.
Here's one from Twitter. Congressman, where does criminal justice reform rank on your list of priorities, and how will you address what the questioner identifies as the incredible level of racial discrimination and in arrests and prison populations?
Well, we already passed legislation to do this, sponsored by my colleague Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn. That legislation is intended to reform the criminal justice system and sentencing provisions, allowing people on good behavior in prison to have a better opportunity to come out and lead productive lives. And I think one of the keys here is, again, treatment of opioid addiction. So many people that are in our local jails and in our state prison population suffer from drug addictions or chemical dependencies, also suffer from mental health problems. And I have supported, again, this is bipartisan. You don't read about it a lot because it's not controversial and it's not people tweeting at each other and fighting with each other. But the Congress on a bipartisan basis has greatly increased funding for mental health, just like we've greatly increased funding for research on things like cancer and Alzheimer's, et cetera. So there is a lot of bipartisan cooperation in this regard. I think we need to do more in terms of criminal justice reform, and I would certainly be open to it. But we have already passed legislation in that regard.
Mr. Delgado.
60% of folks in the state of New York are in prison right now and have not been found guilty of anything. We need bail reform, number one. Too many folks are being locked up and held in prison despite committing nonviolent crimes. We also need to do away with mandatory minimums. We also need to make sure that we're actually funding our public defenders. We also need racial bias training, both to empower community policing and also to protect those individuals who are going out there policing the communities themselves. We also have to tamp down the racial animus and the rhetoric, and we need leaders to do that. I was disheartened after Trump's comments about Charlottesville to not hear the Congressman Faso say anything about those comments. His predecessor, Chris Gibson, actually wrote an op-ed in the Poughkeepsie Journal taking the president to task and saying we should form a bipartisan racial commission. I think it's that kind of moral leadership on both sides of the aisle that can help us tackle these issues.
The gentleman is just simply incorrect. I did criticize President Trump's inadequate response to Charlottesville. And so the gentleman really needs to check the record, have his opposition researchers do a better job next time.
All right, Dave Lombardo, question for you. And this one goes to Antonio Delgado.
Both of your campaigns have raised millions of dollars and funding has flown into the district from outside spending groups. Do we need campaign finance reform?
We absolutely do. And that's why, unlike the congressman, I've pledged to not take corporate PAC money. When you have 80% of folks in this country sharing just 10% of the wealth, and you got the top 10% capturing more than 75% of all the income, when you allow unlimited amounts of money to pour into our system, that means just a handful of folks have access to our government. And it explains why we can't get any real comprehensive bipartisan government legislation done that benefits the vast majority of Americans. I'm also for overturning Citizens United. The congressman is not for overturning Citizens United. In fact, the congressman had a super PAC, I believe it was back in 2014, where he raised $1.5 million from 10 undisclosed donors and refused to disclose who those individuals were.
That's wrong. We have a real choice in this situation.
I'll finish and you can chime in. We have a real choice in this situation. An individual who takes corporate PAC money, who's backed by outside donors like the Mercer family, who refuses to overturn or fight for the overturning of Citizens United, or an individual who's an independent actor. I've raised 94% of all my money from individuals compared to just 60% from John Faso. We have an opportunity to put somebody here who is a real independent actor, somebody who is not beholden to outside interests and only determined to serve the will of the people. And that's exactly what I'm here to do.
45 seconds for Mr. Faso.
Well, this is so disingenuous by my opponent. He receives millions of dollars from people that have no interest in the 19th congressional district. And the fact is that he just moved into the 19th congressional district. He bought a house in Rhinebeck last year, unpacked his bags, registered to vote, and in the very next day signed up to run for Congress. So to hear him talk about outside money, the outside money is coming to him. And the fact is that he worked for one of the biggest corporate law firms in the nation, and he's got a lot of money from people. The fact is corporations are illegal. It is illegal for a corporation to donate since 1907. If local people like realtors or people involved in our local economy decide to contribute to me through a corporate PAC, that's okay.
All right, we have time for one more question. Karen DeWitts.
Okay, and my question, it's to Congressman Faso, but I think this may be finally a question that you can both agree on. There's this huge political divide in our country. You mentioned lack of consensus. We've heard you two sparring, trading accusations, though you've been mostly polite. But how would you bridge this divide that really does seem to be tearing apart our country right now?
Mr. Faso.
Well, if reelected, I will ask Antonio to lead a civility caucus for us in the district and help me do that. In all seriousness, I greatly respect my opponent, and I think that I greatly respect people who disagree with me. You know, Abraham Lincoln said, if you try to please all the people all the time, you won't please anyone. And what I've done throughout this district, I've had over 1,000 meetings with constituents, both in Washington and here around the district. I've conducted numerous meetings with people all throughout this district, on whether it's in farmers, with agriculture, veterans on their issues, seniors, school safety. I've done all of that stuff because I am constantly listening. I recognize that the job of a representative is truly to listen to all the divergent viewpoints. And we have a district with very many divergent viewpoints on the issues of the day. And so I have intentionally tried to tone down the volume, not engage in scurrilous attacks, and to be someone that will be truly representative of the divergent viewpoints of this district. That's why I rank 18th out of 435 as to being bipartisan. And so I join with the gentleman and any others who want to increase civility and responsibility. So because we have to show our kids that we can truly conduct our public affairs in a responsible and civil manner.
All right, Mr. Delgado, 45 seconds.
Yeah, this is a real challenge. I mean, there's a lot of fragmentation in our media, in our news outlets. Even the way we cover information now is overly sensationalized for commercial gain. I think it's imperative that, from my vantage point, I engage with the people. I show up. I host actual open town halls, something that the congressman does not do, and try to build across party lines. You learn a lot about somebody when you actually meet them and you talk to them. I grew up in a diverse background, you know, working class, ended up going to Colgate, played basketball, then Oxford, and then law school at Harvard, met my wife there, and, you know, worked in the hip-hop community, then worked in the
litigation space, in the legal world, I've had to figure out how over the course of my lifetime to find common ground. And I think that experience is why someone like the state senator, lifelong Republican,
right,
John Dunn, decided to endorse my campaign.
I've got to stop you right there. We've got time for closing statements from each. And Antonio Delgado goes first.
Congressman, good exchange. Happy to be here. Thank you all. And to the folks at home, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. You know, we have a real choice here. We have the opportunity to elect some fresh, new blood into the system, not a career politician, not a lobbyist, not somebody who works for the majority or makes, I should say, the majority work, but somebody who has diverse experiences, who is not in the bubble, who's not determined to be overly partisan, but determined to actually represent the people and be beholden to the people. Let's be clear. I've pledged to not take any corporate PAC money. I've pledged to overturn Citizens United. There are no strings attached to me. The leader is not coming to the district to sit down with me for an interview to say that I'm working to make the majority work. I'm here to work for you. I'm only beholden to you, and I can promise you that, and I'm not going to break that promise.
Thank you very much, Mr. Faso. 1 minute for you.
Well, thank you to my opponent and to WMHT for sponsoring this program, and thank all of our viewers out there. I have to say, I really do appreciate the opportunity. I've been honored to serve, and if I am reelected to Congress, I will continue to work for veterans, for agriculture, for all of the people in our district. When I hear my opponent, though, say that I don't have town halls, maybe perhaps it's because he doesn't realize I had a town hall in this very studio last year in April of 17, and we had a studio full of people here and listened, and we debated the issues. And the fact of the matter is, when I had that town hall, he must have just been unpacking his bags, having moved here from New Jersey. And the fact of the matter is, he moved in, he registered to vote, and the very next day, he filed to run for Congress, having no record or experience or job ever in this district as an adult. So I think in terms of commitment, you have my 35-year-plus commitment to this district, and I'll continue to do so.
All right, thank you so much. We're running short on time. Our great thanks to Antonio Delgado and John Faso, our panelists, Dave Lombardo, Karen DeWitt, and Casey Silent. Thank you so much for watching at home. I'm Matt Ryan. Don't forget to vote on November 6th.